All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is daf gimel. We are picking up on Beis Amud Beis, three lines up from the bottom. So also remember, again, we began yesterday the truly riveting sugya of Edim Zomimin. And again, it's interestingly enough, as the Gemara pointed out, we actually began not with a discussion of Edim Zomimin as much as what? A discussion about the exceptions to the rule of Edim Zomimin, situations where again, one cannot visit reciprocal punishment upon the witnesses. So in those situations, one goes ahead and gives the witnesses malchus. One goes in and gives the witnesses lashes. And again, so we discussed those cases, and we also began to formulate certain principles that are necessary for us to build this framework of Edim Zomimin. So in that respect, we continue with that today. Mishur Mabikivam. So let's remember again, in the midst of this discussion, so the Gemara quoted a Braisa, and the Braisa discussed four things, or four attributes, four, I should say, Dalit Dvarim Ne'enro Be'edim Zomimin. Four things that were said about Edim Zomimin. Rabbi Akiva added in an additional one. Rabbi Akiva said, Af in Mishalmin al pi atzman. So Rabbi Akiva said that also Edim Zomimin cannot pay based on their own admission. So Rashi explained that case to mean the following, that if Edim Zomimin show up in Beis Din, and they say that what? We were convicted, or we were found to be Edim Zomimin in another Beis Din, but we escaped before we had to pay, and they show up and they come to admit in a Beis Din that Lamaisa, again, there were false witnesses, so they don't pay based on their own admission. So it says the Gemara, my time is Rabbi Akiva. We'll say three lines up from the bottom. My time is Rabbi Akiva. What's Rabbi Akiva's logic that they can't pay based on their own admission? Simple. Kasabar Knasu. Rabbi Akiva's Rabbi that remember, in the world of compensation, there are two different types of monetary payments. There is mamon and there is knas. Mamon means a financial payment, a monetary payment, and, or I think Seth told me yesterday, compensatory payment, right? And knas means a penalty payment. We'll say, how can you tell if something is a compensatory payment versus a penalty payment? It's very simple. Does the amount that you're paying, is it related to damage done? If it's related to damage done, then usually it's compensatory. If it's fixed in some way, or not related to damage done, then it's usually penalty. So we'll say, so when it comes to Edim Zomimin, Bepashtos, again, it is a penalty payment, not a compensatory payment, because as we've discussed many times, the Edim Zomimin haven't actually done anything. They just did a dibor, right? They just spoke. And furthermore, again, remember, it's fixed in that it's reciprocal for whatever they wanted to visit upon the defendant. Therefore, comes along Rabbi Akiva and says, witnesses, even if they admit to the fact that they were found to be Edim Zomimin, do not have to pay the amount of money. Why? Because it's a knas, it's a penalty. And the halacha is, uknas imishalim apiatzmo. I will say, you don't pay a knas based on your own admission. There's actually even more. There's a further concept, which is modet b'knas pater, which we'll discuss, that sometimes even if you admit a penalty payment, that admission actually results in an exemption. But certainly, according to Rabbi Akiva, if you show up in Beis Din and you say that you're chayiv b'knas, you can't make yourself liable to a knas based on your own admission. So the Gemara says, Rabba Amar, Amar Rabba, Teida, Sharlo Asamaisa, Venera Gimashamit. So we'll say, Rabba says, I'm going to show you, by the way, that it's a Kenas. How can I prove to you that it's a Kenas? Sharlo Asamaisa. These witnesses, Rabba said, didn't do anything. What does it mean they didn't do anything? All they did, Rabba said, was what? Right? They spoke. They gave Eidos. So Rabba said, speech is not a maisa. Speech is not a maisa. Remember again what we said yesterday. That's why, again, even when a person testifies falsely, they're in violation of Lo Sana Berecha Eid Shaker, they're bearing false witness. You can't give somebody malchus for that lav. Why? Because it's a lav she'in bo maisa. It has no action. So Rabbi says, I'm going to show you that it's a knas because they didn't do a maisa. They didn't know maisa. And yet again, Mishalmin, Rav Nachman says, I'll also show you it's a knas. Teida, Shrei Mamon B'yad Bailim Mishalmin. Rav Nachman says, furthermore, again, remember the witnesses, Rabbi say, didn't even affect any kind of change. Let's say the witnesses testified that Reuven owes Shimon $1,000. So the money's still in Reuven's hands. They didn't even affect a transfer of funds, yet they're still punished. So what do you see from here, Rabosei? You see from here that the punishment, the reciprocal punishment, the Edim Zomimin, is in fact a knas. That's what Rabbi Akiva says when they show up in Beis Din and they try to make themselves chayiv. You can't mishalim knas al pi atzmo. You can't become liable to a penalty payment based on your own admission. To which the Gemara says, top of Gimel. So the Gemara says, my nihu delo asumai. So hainu diraba. So we'll say, to which the Gemara says, Rav Nachman, doesn't seem to be adding anything to Rabba. In other words, Rabba comes along and says, I'm going to prove to you it's a kenas payment. Why? Because they didn't do anything yet, they're killed. Rav Nachman says, I'm going to prove to you that it's a kenas payment because they didn't even affect the transfer of money from one set of hands to the other. Yet they're still killed, or yet they're still not killed. They still have to pay. So we'll say, what is Rav Nachman coming to add to Rabba? To which the Gemara says, you're right, Ema v'chein Amar Rav Nachman. You're right, rather again, Rav Nachman is not coming to introduce anything new. Rather, what do we say? Rather, Rav Nachman is just simply coming to support Rabbi, is coming to support Rabba. So we'll say, so now, again, so this finishes this piece. So therefore, Rabbi Kiva holds that Lamaisa, if somebody shows up in Beis Din and says, I was found to be an Eid Zomim in another Beis Din, we do not make them pay based on that own and on their own admission, because you cannot be forced to pay a knas based on your own admission. Now we're going to see an exception to that rule in just a little bit. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, let's say we go back to second line, Gimel Amud Aleph, Eid Zomim, third line, Mishalim Lefi Chalko. We'll say, so now an interesting statement. Rabbi Yehuda says the name of Rav, an Eid Zomim pays in accordance with his portion. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? I'm sorry, I forgot to announce. The shir is dedicated by Yonah and Shashi Ehrenfeld in commemoration of the upcoming yard site of Yonah's grandfather. We hope that on the merit of our Talmud Torah, Hashem will have an aliyah and the family a nechama. So it says, the Gemara, what does it mean that an Eid Zomim is Mishan Lefi Chalko? That an Eid Zomim pays according to his portion. What does that mean? My Mishan Lefi Chalko. If you want to say that it means that Rabosai, again, remember in the case of Eidim Zomin, you have two witnesses. If you want to say that it means each witness pays 50% liability, so we'll say a simple case. Two witnesses show up and they say, Reuven owes Shimon $10,000. Reuven borrowed $10,000 from Shimon and he hasn't paid back. So they're trying to mechayev Reuven to pay Shimon $10,000. They're found to be Eidim Zomin. See, if you say that what Rav's statement means is that each witness pays $5,000, meaning they split the amount. So the Gemara says, Tanina. Okay, meaning we learned that already. Mishalshin b'mamon, they mishalshin b'malkus. And we'll say, we'll discuss this in greater depth later, but the idea is we split the financial amount, but we don't split malkus. And we'll say what that means is that when Eidim Zomim try to mechayiv the defendant to pay money, and they're found to be Eidim Zomimin, so they split the total amount. Meaning we don't say that, let's say in our case, in the example I gave you before, we don't say that each of them pays $10,000, rather what? They have a collective responsibility of $10,000, and the pashtus, they're both on the hook for 50%, as opposed to, we'll say, in cases where we can't give reciprocal punishment, but we're going to give malchus, we don't say that they split 39 malchus. Instead, what happens? They each get their own set of malchus. So I will say, so the notion that they split the finances, the money, we already spoke about that, meaning that's a Mishnah. Rather, Ella Kigon, the Itzum Chad Minayu, the Mishani Palgadide. So we'll say the Gemara advances something interesting. Gemara says, no, what it means is the following. So let's say, Rabbi, say you have two witnesses testifying about a certain case, and one of them was made into an Eid Zomim. So we'll say, so we'll call them Reuven and Shimon are testifying about a case. They're testifying that A owes B money. And then what happens? Two witnesses come along and say, Reuven, there's no way you could have witnessed that because you were with us on the particular day. So the Gemara said, but yet what? These witnesses have nothing to say about Shimon. So Reuven was made into an Eid Zomim. Shimon was not. So the Gemara says, so therefore what the Gemara is suggesting, Rav suggesting is, Reuven will have to pay 50% of the amount that he tried to get A to pay B. So Gemara says, one second. Umi Mishalim, is that true? Is that true that you can make one of the witnesses an Eid Zomim without the other? V'hotanya, but so we learned, Ein Eid Zomim Mishalim Mamon Achi Azumushneihem. But also we learned that, remember, test witnesses are reckoned as a testimonial unit, which means what Rabbi was saying, that ultimately, again, an Eid Zomim cannot be forced to pay money until both of them become Eidim Zomim. So even if one of them is made into an Eid Zomim, there's no liability on his part. Amar Rabbi, rather, Rabbi says, Rabbi say, what's the case? But Omer Eidos Sheker He'arati, Ksuv Gimar says, Rabbi say, rather, what's the case? The case is where one of the witnesses is showing up, and he's saying, I testified falsely. He's admitting that he lied. So the Gemara says, one second. We'll say, if a witness comes along and says, I lied, kol kamine, do we believe him? After all, we'll say, again, the Gemara is throwing out at us a lot of principles that we're going to get into greater depth with, but it's amazing to see them now. We'll say, we have an important principle when it comes to testimony. What's the important principle? Kevan shehigid, shuv eino chelzer umagid. We'll say, once you go ahead and you give testimony, you are not believed to retract it. Rabbi Shmuel says, is a very dramatic principle. Once you say something as an aid, we do not believe you then to take it back. So if we'll call him Reuven gives testimony. Reuven and Shimon are giving testimony about something. So now remember, we'll say, honestly, what we're trying to do over here, Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav, that aid zomim shemim lefi chelko, that a false witness pays his portion of the liability. We are trying to figure out for ourselves what exactly that means. What exactly that means. What Rav is suggesting now is that Lamaisa, if one of the witnesses comes along and says, I lied, I gave testimony, but I lied, that we impose upon him his 50% of the liability. Which the Gemara says, that can't be. Because we have a principle that once a witness gives testimony, then what? Kevan Shehigid, Shuvin Echoz Ramagid, you can't retract it anymore. To which the Gemara says, here's the case. Ela Ba'omer. We'll say, here is the final attempt. Ela Ba'omer. He'adnu ve'hezamnu be'bezdin ploni. We'll say, listen to this. Rather, what's the case? Reuven shows up, and Reuven says, Shimon and I were found to be Edim Zomimin, in a particular basin. So we found the Edim Zomimin, and what happens, Rabbi Osai? And watch this. Kiman, now whose opinion does this reflect? Dilo Krabi Akiva. Do Ikrabi Akiva ha'amar av einu mishalim al piyatzmo. Rabbi Osai, again, we said this before, but it can't be, because what does Rabbi Akiva say? Rabbi Akiva also will say that what? Edim Zomimin is a knas, is a penalty payment. And what's talocha if you admit to a penalty payment? You're not chayiv to pay. You're not chayiv to pay a penalty payment based on your own omissions. What's happening over here? Ella, we'll say final attempt. Ba'omer, he'adnu v'huzamnu bebezdin ploni v'chayivnu mamon. V'chayivnu mamon. Oh, we'll say, what's the case? The case is where Reuven shows up, and he says, shows up in another bezdin. And he says, Shimon and I were found to be Edim Zomimin in another bezdin, and Beis Din passed our verdict. See, Rabbi Osai, in the previous cases, when Reuven showing up in Beis Din, he says, I became an Eid Zomim. What he means is, we're found to be Eidim Zomim, but I escaped before the verdict. In this final case, Rabbi Osai, what's happening over here is like this. Reuven shows up in Beis Din, and Reuven says, Shimon and I were found to be Eidim Zomim in Beis Din A. But, and Beis Din handed down the verdict, but what? We managed to escape before they extracted payment from us. Look at Rashi for just a moment. V'chayavnu mamon, bebezdin shuzamnu. So Bezdin passed the verdict and made us chayiv to pay the defendant. V'amidunu hanidon bedin al hazmenuso v'chayvinu bebezdin u'me'ahu shtaita mamonu u'gabayu ve'in zemashias atzmo shekvar shura lukim. We'll say, listen to this. This is amazing. So we're saying like this. So far, let's assume for our purposes now that everyone agrees that Edim Zomimin Rabbi Osai is a din in knas, is a penalty payment. Let's assume that for just a moment. So it's a penalty payment, but the moment that Beis Din renders its verdict and says, Reuven and Shimon, you are Edim Zomimin, and therefore what? We'll call it kibidis. You have to pay $10,000 to Reuven. Rabbi Osai, how do we categorize that monetary payment? How do we categorize that? That's called mamon. That's no longer a kenas. Why is it no longer a kenas, I will say? Because once Beis Din establishes your obligation to pay, that's called what? Or in English, a debt. It's a debt. I will say, Sina Beis Din says, right, Reuven Shimon, you owe money to A. You owe money to defendant. The fact that the origin of that money is a penalty payment, once Beis Din goes ahead and renders a verdict, the penalty payment is now transformed into mamon. It's a debt. I owe the money. It doesn't make a difference if I owe the money because I'm an Eid Zomim or owe the money because it's my mortgage or owe the money to my credit card. I owe money. Beis Din says, I owe money. Well, say, that becomes mamon. Oh, watch this. So what's the case? Says, remember, again, I'll say, let's just bring this all together. So Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, that Rav made a statement. What was the statement? Eid Zomim Mishayim Lefi Chalko. That Eid Zomim pays his portion. We'll say, what's the case? Now we finally arrived at the conclusion. The case is, Rabbi Osai, we'll call him Reuven. Reuven shows up in another Beis Din, and he says, Shimon and I were found to be Edim Zomimin. We're found to be false witnesses. Beis Din ruled on the case. Beis Din paskin on the case. Beis Din ruled that we are chayiv to pay Reuven $10,000. In which case, Rabbi Osai, when Reuven, I keep using Reuven, we're chayiv to pay the defendant $10,000. When Reuven is saying this, what is he admitting to? What is he admitting to? Mamon. He's admitting to a debt. He's no longer admitting to Knas. And therefore, again, the new Beis Din that he shows up in Beis Din B can make a chayiv to pay his portion. Now the only thing he can be chayiv to pay is what? Only thing he's chayiv to pay is what? Is his portion, right? He's not chayiv to pay Shimon's portion, because Shimon is his own guy. But Reuven, because now of his own admission, is making an admission of a monetary liability. When you admit a monetary liability in front of Bezin can make you chayiv to pay it. So Gemara says, okay, now what's the chiddush? Sagadait chamino, kevin de lachabri lo matzi nechayiv le'ihu nami lo mechayiv. So we'll say, but I might have thought that since Reuven can't obligate Shimon through Reuven's own admission. In other words, Reuven's admission only works for him, doesn't work for Shimon. So I might have thought that since Reuven's admission doesn't work for Shimon, then what? Maybe it shouldn't work for himself either. Kamashmala, no, it does. We'll say. So bottom line with the Gemara says, we'll say, and this indeed the Rambam accepts as halacha lamaisa, is that if Reuven, aid zoming number one, shows up in a Beis Din, and we'll say, now by the way, it's a very nuanced distinction here. If Reuven shows up in a Beis Din, and he says, I was an aid zoming, but I escaped before Beis Din rendered the verdict. Would he be chayiv to pay based on that admission? No. Why? Because ultimately he'd be admitting to a kness, a penalty payment. But yet if he says, I escaped from Beis Din after Beis Din ruled, the verdict was handed down, but I escaped before I had to pay, would he be chayiv to pay? And the answer is yes. Why? Because once Beis Din renders its verdict, that is no longer a knas, a penalty payment, rather is transformed to mamon. And if you admit your liability for mamon, you are in fact chayiv to pay. Amazing, amazing case. Says the Mishnah, we'll say, weiter. Me'idir anu bishploni. We'll say it just gets better. Me'idir anu bishploni. This is actually a fascinating case. Me'idir anu bishploni shegirish es ishto. We'll say, listen to this. So, right? So we'll call them witnesses. We'll just call them, I'm trying to think of the best term. We'll call them A and B. Just for now. A and B. Right? Witnesses A, witness A, witness B. Are testifying. They come to Beis Din and they say, Reuven divorced his wife, v'lo nasan ksuvasa. And he never paid her ksuva. So they're showing up at Beis Din saying that Reuven owes his ksuva to his wife. Shabbos, listen to this. So Reuven says, correct. I have never paid the ksuva to my wife. Do you know why? Because I didn't divorce her. Right? If you look at Rashi, Rashi's is amazing. Shigiris is shisto, bifanina beyond ploni. So again, they're testifying, we saw Reuven divorce his wife on the 15th of Cheshvan. It happened right in front of us. Vahu v'zeh omer, lo girashdi, what are you talking about? I never divorced her. Ve'ini chayiv al ksuvas, al ksuva, v'rimtu zomim be'imanu hayismen. So we'll say, so this case over here is, they're testifying that two things. He divorced her, never paid the ksuva. He's in essence agreeing with the thrust of their testimony, which is, yes, I have never paid her ksuva, because then there's a very good reason for that, because I haven't divorced her. Then what they will say, A and B are found to be Edim Zomim. So another two more witnesses show up. They say to the A and B, there's no way you could testify that Reuven divorced his wife on the 15th of Cheshvan, because on the 15th of Cheshvan you were with us at another location. Okay, so now both say, now they become Edim Zomim. Now the Shaila is what? What's the Shaila? What should they pay? What should they pay? Now, so we'll say, so the simple answer would be what? Ksuva. Ksuva, that's a simple answer. Here's the problem. Says the Rebbe, we'll say, this is so amazing. V'halo, bein hayom u'bein lamachar, sofa litin la ksuva. So we'll say, here's the problem. To say that they should just have to pay the full value of the ksuva to the husband is not necessarily appropriate. Why? Because it is possible that today, tomorrow, the husband will have to pay the ksuva. We'll say, why today, why tomorrow the husband have to pay the ksuva? Because maybe what? First of all, maybe they might get divorced, or he might die. Or he might die in his estate might have to. In other words, we'll say, to say that they would have to pay in the full amount of the ksuva kind of indicates to us that they wanted to make him chayiv in something that he would not be chayiv in. All the Mishnah is just saying is, it's not necessarily true. There could have been circumstances under which he would have had to pay the ksuba. Maybe they would have gotten divorced. Maybe the Maisa, he would have died. Look at Rashi, Valo ben Ayom, Kilomar, Nahi Shamu Eilu, Im Tomar Kala Ksuva. If you want to say they just want to pay the whole ksuva, Valo Shema Yamos, or Yugashan, Ah Yomu Machar, Visova Litin Laksuva, Nimto Shlohim Asidin, also Klum. So we'll say, it's possible that they would have deprived him of nothing because he would have ended up having to pay this ksuva. Anyway, so how do we gauge the amount that he has to pay? So to which the Gemara says, oh, Om din kama adam rote litim biksuvasa shalzu, shen nis amana onis karsha vimesi yoshana baila. So this is actually very interesting. So essentially, the way we evaluate Rabbi Say is, how much would someone pay on a futures option on this ksuva? By the way, we learned this in our ksuvas days, that there were situations where a woman would sell her ksuva. Her ksuva, remember, a woman's ksuva represents a number of different things. It represents, first of all, again, her nichsei mulug, right? Any property that she brought, or nechsechit on barzel, any property that she brought into the marriage, which the husband may have guaranteed the value, it also represents a face value. There's a face value of any ksuba. 200 zuz for a first marriage, for a besula, 100 zuz for a second marriage. So a woman could sell her ksuba. It was that when you buy a ksuba, so again, remember, you buy it at a discount. Why do you buy it at a discount? Because there's a possibility that what? That she predeceases him. Remember, if she predeceases him, you get nothing. You get nothing. But if ultimately, again, she gets divorced, or lemaisa again, he predeceases her, and then she dies, lemaisa again, there could be some level of ksuba. So we'll say, so therefore the Mishnah says, we evaluate the ksuba based on how much someone would pay to buy this entitlement. Look at Rashi. Omdin kama adam rotzalitim b'ksubasa shalzu. Misafik, she misarma oneskarsha, if she's widowed or divorced. Yitlena lokeach v'mesa, however, if she dies first, yirashana baila v'yafsid mausa. If she predeceases him, so ultimately buyer gets nothing. So the Gemara says, fine. So it says the Gemara. So it says, Sekeitzat Shabin. So how exactly do we evaluate this futures option? Amar Rav Chisda. So Rav Chisda says, Bibal. So we'll say, interestingly enough, although the Mishnah seemed a bit straightforward, the Gemara now poses a machlokis. Rav Chisda says, we evaluate it through the husband's perspective. What does it mean from the husband's perspective? So we'll say, ultimately, again, a husband, under normal assumption, the husband has certain property, certain real estate that is set aside for the ksuva. Now, the reason now, does a husband have to set aside property for a ksuva? Does he have to? The answer is no. The advantage of setting aside property for a ksuva rabosai is what? Is if you don't set aside real estate, then what? The lien is upon all of your real estate, which sometimes can make it difficult to transact business. Therefore, a husband sometimes is better off placing the specific lien on certain pieces of property. Rav Chisda says that essentially what it means is we look at the value ultimately again of the property that a husband went ahead and set aside for the ksuva, and that's the amount that the edim would have, that the edim zomen would have to pay. Rav Nasa bar Oshia Amar Beisha. Rav Nasa bar Oshia says no, that at the end of the day we look at how much would a person be willing to go ahead and pay for the schus of the ksuva, how much would a person be willing to pay ultimately again for the future right to buy the ksuva, but I will say we subtract that from the face value of the ksuva, and that's the amount that the witnesses have to pay. Rav Nassim bar Oshia Amar Beisha Amar Papa Beisha Ubiksuva. So we'll say ultimately again, Rav Papa essentially adapts Rav Nassim's position that we take the face value of the ksuva and we subtract from that the amount that a person would be willing to pay for the ksuva, and I will say that's the amount that the witnesses have to pay. What we don't take into account, Rav Bosai, is any amount of nichsei mulog. Remember again, as I mentioned before, a ksuva has multiple pieces to it. There's the face value, which is the 100 zuz or the 200 zuz. That's a minimum, by the way. Remember again, you could have a situation where a husband committed to a much larger ksuva amount. You could have that situation. But I will say, in addition to that, is nichsei tzon barzel, where the husband guarantees the value of the property that the wife brought into the marriage upon death or divorce, and the nichsei mulog, where the husband says, whatever's left over of this property at the time of death or divorce, I will give back to you. Says Rav Papa, that does not come into this calculation. Rav Papa essentially says, when figuring out how much Eidim Zomim pay, we take the amount, the face value of the ksuva, minus the amount that a person would pay for the future option for the ksuva, and that's the amount that Eidim Zomim have to pay. Says the Mishnah, Bosei, Viter. Midar Abish Plori, Shuchayv L'Chavir Elav Zuz. Listen, Bosei, this again, it just... incredible. So remember, A and B, same A and B, we're going to keep it simple. Witnesses A and B testify that Reuven owes Shimon 1,000 zuz. Now what the witnesses testify is that Reuven borrowed money from Shimon. Reuven owes Shimon 1,000 zuz, and he has a duration of 30 days to pay it back. 30 days. But Reuven says, no, it's not true. Not 30 days, but rather how long? 10 years. 10 years. So again, in this case, Reuven is agreeing. Reuven is not disputing the material fact to the case that I owe Shimon 1,000 zuz. What he is arguing on is the duration of the loan. It is not 30 days, but rather, again, it's going to be 10 years. So what do we say? Omdim kama adam rotze litein viyubiado elef zuz. So what happens? People say this now again, unwritten part of the Mishnah is what happens. People say witnesses have to be zomim. So what do you do in this case? Because on one hand, were the witnesses were A and B trying to deprive Reuven of $1,000? Yeah. No, because also remember again, no one's disputing the loan. No one's disputing the loan. Remember again, everyone's agreeing that Reuven borrowed $1,000. Reuven has to pay $1,000. That's not what's at issue over here. What's at issue is the duration. The duration. The witnesses say 30 days. Reuven says 10 years. So both say now A and B, the witness of the Edom Zomim. So the Shaila is, how do we gauge the financial, how do we gauge the reciprocal punishment for the Edom? So watch this. So Omdim, so both say this actually is a very logical intuitive case. Omdim, Kama Adam Rosa Litain, Viyu Biyado Elevzuz, Beinosnin Mikan Vad Labin Yom, Beinosnin Mikan Vad Esther Shalom. So both say it's a very simple idea. What we ask is the following. How much of a premium would a person be willing to pay to have the ability to pay off the debt in 10 years versus 30 days? And that premium of being able to hold on to the money for a longer amount of time, that's what the witnesses wanted to deprive Reuven of, and therefore, again, that's what the Eden Zoman have to pay. So, for argument's sake, if I would be willing to pay a $100 premium to keep $1,000 for 10 years versus 30 days, that premium is ultimately, again, what the Edom Zomim will be forced to pay. Incredible. Mm-hmm. Amrav Yudom Rav. So we'll say, now, so let's go back to Amrav Yudom Rav. So we'll say, we're not, obviously, I just want to be clear. Don't get nervous. It was just the Mishnah, so it's just the beginning. I promise we're going to get into it. I know. Get excited, get angry, get anxiety about it, but we're going to resolve it. Says the Amrav Yudom Shmuel. Hamavis Chaver, Esther Shana. So we'll say, now, remember again what the Gemara just points out, by the way, is, we're talking about 10-year loans. 10-year loans now bring up other issues of Osai. What are the other issues? I'm Rabbi Mishmuel. Hamaves chaver le'esar shanim shvius misham toso. Whoa, one second. If you're lending someone money for 10 years of Osai, there's another issue. What's the other issue? Shmita cancels the debt. I totally misgauged the size of Amud Beis. Okay, based on the time. All right, good. All right, we're going to be all right. Got a little carried away. You know what? I'm so used to not having these big I got it to pages. I just have to run through, but wow, I blew this one. Okay, good. We're going to be all right. So we'll say, watch this. So now the Gemara says, if you go ahead and you lend someone money for 10 years, so by definition, Shemitah cancels the debt. Shemitah cancels the debt. V'afagav dehashta lo karina be lo yigos, sof asi lide lo yigos. So we'll say, The Gemara is expounding over our principle of lo yigos. If you look, so if you have the Torah or Hashem which quotes the pesukim, so we'll say the pasuk reads like this: V'zed var shmita shomel kobab mashe yado asher yasha bereihu. So we'll say this is the law of shmita. You can't collect your debts. Lo yigos es reihu. You cannot collect or you cannot urge for collection from your friend. So we'll say that's what we call lo yigos. So va'afagav dashal karina be lo yigos. So we'll say even though now, so look at Rashi for just a moment. Va'afagav dahashta b'shvius lo karina be lo yigos. Shari imbal l'nuksho b'lo shvius nami eno yachol. Lo aminon kevon lo karina be lo yigos. So we'll say watch this. See, I might have thought that the only time Shemitah cancels a debt is when the collection is due on Shemitah. If the collection is due on Shemitah, and therefore, or the Torah says you can't collect the debt on Shemitah. So if the debt is collectible on Shemitah, I would have said that's when Shemitah cancels the debt. But if a debt's not collectible for Shemitah, we'll say, let's say again, I lend Reuven $1,000 on year one of the Shemitah cycle. Comes year number seven, the debt's not collectible. That's not collectible for another 3 years. See, even though even though the debt is not collectible now during the Shemitah year, sof asi li de lo yigos. So we'll say, since ultimately again, the debt will become collectible, Shemitah cancels it. So we'll say, you see something very interesting over here. The Havamina is that Shemitah only cancels debts. What kind of debts? Debts that are due on Shemitah. Kamash Malon, no. Shemitah will cancel any debt, even a debt that is not collectible on the Shemitah year, but any debt that will become collectible, Shemitah cancels. So we'll say, so therefore again, based on this, now we just said, is that any 10-year debt by definition is cancelled by Shemitah? Masiv Rav Kan, Rav Kan raised the kasha, Omdim, Kama Adarot Zalit. So we'll say, remember what did we just say before? A and B come and testify that Reuven borrowed $1,000 from Shimon for 30 days. Right? For 30 days. Reuven says that what? Reuven says it was for 10 years. Turns out the Edom are Edom Zomim. So we'll say, what did the Mishnah say? How do we gauge how much the Edom are Chayiv? We gauge ultimately, again, based on how much would a person pay to keep a loan, to keep a money for 10 years versus 30 days. But says the Gemara, I don't understand. So the Gemara says, so omdin kama adun rotzi li tevi yula elas ubi yado, bein li tevi kava la yon, bein li tevi kava eser shonim. So 1 second. Vi'i amrit shvies misham tasam. We'll say, if you say that Shemitah cancels the debt, then kulhu nami by shlumile. The Rabbi will say, in reality, what should the Edom Zomin have to pay? The Edom Zomin will say, should have to pay the entire amount of the debt. Why? Why, Rabbi will say? Because remember, again, they want to say that Reuben owes Shimon money in 30 days. Really, the debt was for 10 years. If the debt was for 10 years, then what would have happened to it? It would have been canceled by Shemitah, which effectively means Reuben would have owed Shimon nothing. Now, according to the testimony of the witnesses, that the debt is due in 30 days. They're making Reuben chayiv for the entire amount of the debt, which means that when they're found to be Edom Zomin, they should have to pay what they're both saying. They should have to pay the entire face value of the debt. Rava, no. What's the case over here? So Rava quickly constructs the case as saying, we're dealing with a situation where Shemitah would not have canceled the debt. How is that possible? How come I ask Inon? But Milva ala Mashkon, but we're dealing with the case of someone who lent on collateral. And again, we'll get into these discussions. If you lend on collateral, so ultimately, again, Shemitah does not cancel the debt. Very quickly, why is that? Because whenever there is a collateralized loan, it's as if collection of the loan has already begun. Since at the end of the day, if the borrower defaults, the lender could keep the mashkon, so it's as if repayment has already been initiated, or if repayment has already been done in a certain way, therefore Shemitah doesn't cancel the debt. Or, ubamoser shtaros of lebezdin, or when someone gives over their debts to Bezdin, which Rabbi says is what we call a prizbol, right? The prizbol, that ultimately one goes ahead and gives over the debts to Bezdin, and therefore Rabbi says Shemitah only cancels privately held debts, does not cancel debts held by Bezdin. Therefore, Rabbi said the case. So therefore, Rabbi just says over here that Lamaisa, we're not dealing with a case, even if it was a 10-year debt, the loan would not have been canceled by Shemitah. So because of that, that's why the Mishnah says when gauging or when assessing the punishment of the Edom Zomin, we look at the difference between how much would a person be willing to pay to have 10 years to pay off the debt versus 30 days to pay off the debt. This time, because Rabbi said we learned, Hamava ala mashkon, famosa shtrosa of Lebezin, ein mashmitin, right? That if somebody goes ahead and borrows money with a collateral, right, borrows money, gives collateral, or somebody, the lender, gives over his loan document to the Beis Din, ein mashmitin, so Shemitah does not cancel the debt. Igad, I will say, others have a different version. It's the same exchange, just the reverse. Amrav Yehuda Meshmuel, hamalves chaber le'aser shanim, ein shemis mesham taso. So we learned before that what? That if you lend someone money for 10 years, Shemitah does not cancel it. So Bosai, this Ike da Amir Bosai is just the exact reverse of the previous discussion, but the bottom line is going to be the same in the interpretation of the Mishnah. So Bosai, in this version, Rabbi Huda saying in Shmuel that if somebody lends money for someone for 10 years, Shemitah doesn't cancel. Va'afagav, the asili de lo yigos, and even though the debt will ultimately become collectible, hashtam yalo karina be lo yigos, right now, during the Shemitah year, the debt is not collectible. Rav Kana afana nabitinis. So Rav Kana said, we also learned this. This is supported by our Mishnah. What does our Mishnah say? Om din kama adam rotze litein vi elef zuz biyado, bein litein mekan lad yam yom, ubein litein mekan v'esr shanim. So say, what did the Mishnah say? When assessing the punishment of the Edom Zomamin, so how do we gauge the punishment? Do we look? How much of a premium would a person pay to be able to hold on to the money for 10 years versus 30 days? And that's the amount of money that we impose upon the Edom Zomamin, to which the Gemara's V'i Amrit Shias Mesham Taso, and it bless you, if you hold that Shemitah cancels the debt, Kulu Nami Bo Shlumile, then ultimately the Edom Zomamin should have to pay the entire amount, because by making the debt due in 30 days as opposed to 10 years, they're causing the lender to lose out on the ability to have Shemitah cancel the debt. To which the Gemara says, Amar Rava, both say, it's the same, again, it's the reverse of the previous discussion, but the same bottom line. Amar Rava, hacham ha'askin, and what's the case? B'milva ala mashkon u'b'moser shtaros av lebezdin. We're dealing with someone, ultimately, a borrower who gave a mashkon, or a lender who gave over his debt to Bezdin, Prusbol, v'snan ha'malva ala mashkon u'b'moser shtaros av lebezdin, ein mashmitin. So we'll say, ultimately, again, so bottom line, just so you understand how the Mishnah works, is that Mishnah must be talking about a case of someone, of a lender, who either did a prizbol or there was collateral. Okay, now that we know that, therefore, Rabbi say, in this case, where the Edom Zomamin tried to say that the debt is only for 30 days, but in reality, the debt was for 10 years, so the punishment for the Edom Zomamin is what? Is that we look at the difference in how much of a premium would someone pay to have a 10-year window to repay the loan. That's the amount of money that the Edom Zomamin will be chayiv to pay to the defendant. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. We'll say, so now that we started with Shemitah, now we're going to get into some very interesting, really interesting cases. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Homer Lechaber, we'll say, listen to this. I lend money to Rabbi. No, Edom, we're taking a break from Edom for a little while. Listen to these cases. Homer Lechaber, I say to Reuven, Almenas Shelo Tishmeteni Shvius. We'll say, listen to this. I lend Reuven money for 10 years. Say, Reuven, I'm lending you this money on the condition that Shemitah will not cancel the debt. So we'll say, what's Talocha? Shvius Mishavetas. Shkoyach. Right, thank you. Right? Shemitah cancels the debt. Shemitah cancels the debt. So we'll say, what's the logic here? Lema kasar v'shmua masna masha kasar v'torahu. V'chola masna masha kasar v'torahu. So we'll say, this seems to be a pretty straightforward principle. You can't make a condition which runs counter to Torah law. And if you make a condition that runs counter to Torah law, the condition is batal. The condition is batal. Also, remember we saw this? Okay, we'll have to give examples. So therefore, again, I say to Reuven, I'm lending you the money on the condition that Shemitah does not cancel the debt. First of all, I'll say the interesting part is, what we also do is pagin and dibur, meaning the loan transaction works, meaning I lent them the money. It's just that the condition does not work, and Shemitah will, in fact, cancel the debt. But one second, Gemara says, but listen to this case. Va itmar, this is fascinating. Homer lechavero, this is actually very shayach. Homer lechavero, amenas she'en lecha alai ono. Habosai, watch this. Watch this. Let's say, I'm engaging in a transaction. The laws of ono, Habosai, say that what? You can't overcharge a person by more than a sixth. I'm selling Reuven an item. I know I'm overcharging him. He knows I'm overcharging him, but he really wants it very badly, and I like money. So what happens? So I say to him, I'm selling you this object on the condition that you have no claims of ono against me. Right? I'm charging you, but I'm overcharging you by 200%. Right? So lemais again, what's the halacha Rabosai? Rav Amar, yesh lo alav ono, uShmuel Amar, ein lo alav ono. So we'll say Shmuel said, now again, let's leave, so Rav says, there's Ona, because again, Shmuel says, no. So we'll say Shmuel's contradicting himself. Shmuel is the one who just said before that what? If I lend Reuven money and I say to him, I say to him, this is your loan on the condition that Shemitah will not cancel the debt. Shemitah cancels the debt. Yet Shmuel says, if I say to my friend, I'm selling you this on the condition that you have no claim of Ona on me, ultimately again, Shmuel says that tonight works. But one second, Ona, I will say, at least according to some, is Doraisa. It's Masna Masha Kasav Batorah. Yet, so why does the tonight work? I will say, watch this. This is an amazing distinction. Amar Rav Hanan, the didimi farshei de Shmuel the following. Bosei, listen to this distinction. Amenas she'in locha alai ono, ein lo alav ono. Amenas she'in bo ono, hare yesh bo ono. Bosei, watch this. It all comes down to the words you use. And Bosei, so Shmuel says like this. If I say, I'm selling Reuven the object, and I'm clearly overcharging him. So say if I say to him, I'm selling you this object in the condition that you have no claim of ona against me, that works, Rabosai. If I say that there is no ona, that doesn't work. Rabosai, why? What's the distinction? Ona is an objective fact. So to say that I'm selling you this item on the condition that there is no ona, that's a false statement. There is ona. Reuven, I'm overcharging you. So you're trying to create an alternate reality that does not exist. There is ona. So to say something that's factually untrue, that there's no ona, or that ona should not exist, that is a false statement, and therefore there will be ona. To say, I'm selling you this on the condition that what? That what? That you have no, this is so exciting, that you have no claim of ona against me, means that what? That what? There is ona. But you're agreeing to what?
Exactly.
To release your claim. That works. That works. Meaning, we're both agreeing there is ona. You have a claim against me to recapture the extra overcharging. You are agreeing proactively to release me from that claim. That works. Same thing over here. Hakanai, I will say, so exciting. Hakanami, Amanas, second line. Amanas, Shlotish Metani Shvius, Ein Shvius Meshantaso. Suppose you're listening to this. So he says, Amanas, Shlotish Metani Shvius, Ein Shvius Meshantaso. Let's say if a person says, I'm lending you this money on the condition that Shemitah should not cancel the debt. I both said that statement doesn't work. Why? Because you can't legislate against, or you can't stipulate, that's a better word, you can't stipulate against the institution of Shemitah. You can't do that. You're not strongly emotional. Moshalom says Shemitah is Mishametes. So you can't say, I'm lending you this money on the condition that the framework of Shemitah should not apply. Not true. Not true. Hamenashelo tishmeteni shvius. So we'll see this distinction. This is hamenashelo tishmeteni bishvius. Right? Ein shvius misham taso. So we'll say ultimately again, if you say that lemaisa again, I'm lending you this money. Hamenashelo tishmeteni bishvius. That ultimately again, the debt should not be forgiven in the seventh year. Then shmitah does not wipe out the debt. Alo tishmeteni shvius. Shvius misham taso. So we'll say you hear the distinction in the wording over here. It's a bishvius and a shvius. If you see, I'm working backwards. If you see, I'm not shalot tishmetini shvius, Rabosai. So that becomes an objective statement. Shvius should not be mishamit. Shemitah should not wipe out the debt. I'm sorry. You don't have the power to say that. Shemitah is an institution that is above all of us. But to say Amenashlo Tishmetini Bishvius means that you agree to pay despite the fact that Shemitah comes along and technically cancels the debt. Rabosai, that works. That works. So essentially, Rabosai, the Klal Gadol is, if you can't stipulate against an already, you can't stipulate in a way which contradicts an already established framework. What you can do is parties could agree to release or to maintain claims against one another. So I can't make a stipulation that says there is no ona. Ona is a statement, is a reality. If there is ona, there's not ona. What I can say is you agree not to have a claim of ona against me. I can't say that Shemitah will not cancel. What I can say is you agree essentially to pay me even though it is Shemitah. So I'll say the idea is if you personalize the claims, then ultimately it works. If you try to legislate or stipulate against already established frameworks, that's inherently contradictory. You can't do it. We'll say one more line. Tana. Hamalves chaveiro stam. We'll say again, these are just fascinating cases. Person goes ahead and lends his friend money. What does it mean, stam? Stam means without a duration. I lend Reuven $1,000. Great, everything's fine. One issue, which is, I don't indicate how long the duration of the loan is. Ino rashe l'tova pachos mi lamed yom. We'll say the halacha is stam halva lamed yom. That ultimately, again, when you lend someone money, even if you don't stipulate a duration, minimum. Yeah. Thank you. The lowest minimum duration, right? The minimum duration of a loan is 30 days. So we'll say, when do we say that the minimum duration of a loan is 30 days? That's only if you drafted a document. The law of it inish the tarach the cost of shtar betzimit las yom, because also writing a shtar takes time. You have to get a silver, you have to pay money. So I'm not going to write a shtar for something that's less than 30 days. Aval milva al peh low. But I will say, if a person is lending money just through a verbal agreement where there's no real exertion, no monetary outlay with the document, then it could be that the loan ultimately is even for less than 30 days. So we'll stop over here for today. I'm going to move at a faster pace in Meretz Hashem tomorrow. But again, I want to say, so we're stopping over here. So just, we'll pick up with this topic in Meretz Hashem tomorrow, which is Stam Halva, unqualified loan, what's the duration? So what we just left off with is a distinction between a written loan and a verbal loan. A written loan, ultimately, again, will have a minimum duration of 30 days, but a verbal loan might only be extended for a smaller amount of time in Meretz Hashem to be continued tomorrow.
David. Just stop this.